Good morning. I'm Donna Quinn, and for the next half hour, you'll be listening to Talk of Our Towns. Today in the studio here at KMUN, I have Dr. John Schmidt. He is the development director for the Land Institute, based in Salina, Kansas. What is the Land Institute, and why is it important to you, to me, and to everyone who cares about food and eating and agriculture? So we'll be talking with him. And Dr. John Schmidt, I'm so glad to welcome you here in the studio today.
Well, it's nice to be here. Thanks, Donna.
Before we talk about the Land Institute, let's talk a little bit about Dr. John Schmidt. Please tell us about yourself.
Well, I've had a rather checkered past, but I grew up on a farm in Kansas. Did an undergraduate degree in biology at a little school called Ottawa University, then a master's and PhD at Colorado State University in wildlife biology. Then was in higher education for about 14 years, mostly at Colorado State University. Then was regional director with Ducks Unlimited for 16 years, working Colorado mostly, a little Wyoming, a little New Mexico. And then was lured up to the state of Montana and worked for the University of Montana for a number of years. And then grandchildren, for the most part, had us looking for new opportunities. And I got to visiting with Wes Jackson one day, and one thing led to another, and I ended up at the Land Institute.
And you've been at the Land Institute for about
almost nine years now.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
okay.
It's been a great fit.
And Wes Jackson is the founder of the Land Institute. And tell us about the Land Institute, but also tell us about Salina, Kansas. Why Salina, Kansas?
Well, Wes had roots in Salina, Kansas, and I guess I say that tongue-in-cheek a little bit. He went to college there at Kansas Wesleyan University, and then after his PhD, taught on the faculty at Kansas Wesleyan University. So he had spent time in Salina. He had some land there. And although he went to California for a time, became a full tenured professor at California State, he was called back to Kansas, shall we say, to start the Land Institute in 1976 is when actually he started it.
So Wes Jackson is the founder and director of the Land Institute. And I read an article about him which said that he was a large man, a powerful presence with the metabolism of a hummingbird. And I love that because you can see this is a man who's going to get some things done.
Yes, he is.
And the Land Institute was his idea because?
Well, he mainly because of soil erosion. He is a student of a lot of things, but as he saw that the Soil Conservation Service had been in business for 40-some years. We were still losing topsoil at an alarming rate and really hadn't made much headway. And he said, what's the problem here? And he got to looking at the way nature grew things and the way man had been growing things in agriculture for 10,000 years, and there were some marked differences. And so he set about to create a new type of agriculture, and I guess that's, in a nutshell, would be the background of the Land Institute.
The Land Institute is a 501c3. You're a nonprofit organization.
That's correct.
And you have memberships. You obviously apply for grants, and you have an excellent website, which has a lot of information. So,
thank you.
Let's talk a little bit about the history of agriculture and why that hasn't worked.
Well, can I back up just a little bit and talk about nature's nature's plan was always to, I mean, if you look at a Kansas prairie or an alpine meadow in Colorado or a rainforest in the tropics, they're all composed of perennial plants growing in a mixture. That was nature's way, perennial plants in a mixture. So when man started agriculture 10, 12,000 years ago, we don't know exactly when, but man turned that upside down and started planting annual plants in a monoculture. So that creates a lot of problems because with a monoculture, you get much more susceptibility to insects and weeds and diseases, so you have to use the pesticides to get out of that problem. With monocultures, you have to disturb the land every year. Typically the soil is bare for months at a time, so it washes away, it blows away, so you lose topsoil, and that is not a sustainable way to live. And a lot of, if you look at ancient history, a lot of civilizations have gone out of business because they lost their topsoil. Monocultures in certain parts of the country require lots of irrigation, and we're depleting Ogallala Aquifer, which is a famous aquifer that underlies about six states, including part of Kansas. And some places they're using water at 2 feet a year, and it does replenish itself, but on the order of magnitude of about a half an inch a year. So it doesn't take a great mathematician to realize that in time there's not going to be any water down there for irrigation anymore. So in many ways, soil, water, pesticides, we don't know the whole story about that. We're using them, but we know in some cases there's greater incidences of cancer around areas that use a lot of pesticides, but they haven't necessarily dotted all the T's and crossed, or dotted the I's and crossed all the T's. Another related thing is fertilizer. With a monoculture, you don't have legumes growing in this mixture like there are in a prairie. And legumes have nitrogen-fixing bacteria, so they supply the nitrogen for the other plants in the mixture. But in a monoculture, like a field of corn, field of nothing but wheat, you have to apply that nitrogen to get the good crops. You have to apply ammonium sulfate nitrogen to these plants, most of which does not use by the plants, but ends up in our drinking water supply or in the Missouri River or the Columbia River, and it creates dead zones at the mouth of these rivers because of all the fertilizer that washes down from Illinois and Iowa and Kansas. It creates these huge blooms of algae. When that algae dies, it uses all the oxygen in the water, and the fish don't have a place to, they just have to leave because there's no oxygen.
It's all connected,
right.
And so the Dust Bowl, that might not have happened had we been practicing a different kind of agriculture?
Yes, if they were practicing the agriculture that the Land Institute envisions, that would feature perennial plants growing in a mixture, there would have been deep roots. The plants wouldn't have died like the shallow-rooted wheat did during the Dust Bowl. The plants would have lived. The soil would have been protected. There wouldn't have been a Dust Bowl.
How is the Land Institute then looking at revolutionizing agriculture? You're primarily doing research with perennial grains. Tell us a little bit about what you do in your work and what the Land Institute does.
Well, my work specifically is to get the funding for the scientists to do their work. So we're working on about a half a dozen different species to convert them from an annual crop that has to be, the ground has to be disturbed every year, the seeds replanted, convert them to a perennial species. So we're working on rice in China, we're working on sorghum, a legume, wheat, and then a perennial wheat that's a little different than the hybrid wheat that I'm talking about here, sunflowers for their oil qualities. It seemed like I'm missing one, but that's some of the ones we're working on.
And so for those listeners who might say, well, wait, when you talk about hybrid things, are you doing anything with GMOs, genetically modified organisms?
No, we're not. We're doing it the old-fashioned way, and mainly because there's no known technique to do it with GMOs. When most of the talk about GMOs have been like, for example, Roundup Ready corn or soybeans. They can move just one gene, and voila, you've got that Roundup Ready situation. With perenniality, as I understand it from the scientists, and don't ask me too many detailed questions about that, but there are hundreds of genes involved, and so it's just way too complicated. So we're doing it the old-fashioned way through plant breeding and by hybridizing with sometimes take a perennial plant that's related closely to an annual crop, and then cross the two, and you hope you get the best of both worlds.
And when we talk about, you know, agriculture and we talk about growing food, more and more people are wanting to know, where does our food come from and how is it being grown? And so you have approximately 800 acres there in Salina, Kansas, and that is where you have the research station and you are growing these grains, which are healthy grains, working within the laws of nature.
Right. Oh, yeah, for sure. And I might add, the reason we're working on grains and not fruits, not vegetables, is because grains produce about 70% of the calories that you and I consume worldwide. That's about 70%. Wheat, corn, soybeans are some of the big ones. Rice, of course. And if there's a problem with the way we're growing food today, and we think there is, it's a big problem. It affects about 70% of all the farmland in the world. And I had one of our researchers do a little research for me on this topic, just to get a feel for the magnitude of how many acres are cultivated for grains worldwide. Would you like to hazard a guess?
Oh, I don't know if I could think in those kind of numbers, but okay.
I couldn't either. 19 million square miles is in cultivated land around the planet. So when you think of all that land being soil erosion going on and all the problems there is with that, it's a big, big problem. So that's a problem we're out to solve.
And this isn't a quick fix. We talked a little bit about this earlier. This is, you all are in this for the long haul. The Land Institute has been around for 37 years. And you are, but it's very exciting, the work you're doing, because you're getting closer to being able to say to a farmer, we have a better way for you to use your land.
Right. When Wes Jackson started this 37 years ago, he said this is going to be a 50 to 100 year project, and his right after that he says we're right on track. So we think we've got a perennial wheat-like species that we've trademarked Kernza that'll be released within 10 years, and then some kind of order of sequence would be, and I'm guessing here a little bit, sorghum, sunflowers, rice, and some, I'm not sure which would be first, but they're all coming along rather nicely. But again, it's not a quick fix.
What would people see if they drove up to the Land Institute in Salina? Would we see a lot of greenhouses, a lot of buildings where, because really you're doing research and development right now.
Right.
Would we see large fields of sunflowers? What would we see?
You'd see a lot of test plots, and these aren't necessarily big. I mean, you can plant a lot of plants in an acre or half an acre, and because we have to hand harvest a lot of these and count the seeds and weigh the seeds, you know, you don't want 100 acres with that kind of detail. So you'll see a lot of test plots with this Kernza, with a hybrid perennial wheat, with sunflowers, with sorghum, with Illinois bundle flower, which is not a common plant to a lot of people. You'll see a nice, fairly new research center that's 3 years old. You'll see a nice greenhouse and some offices.
All right. Well, I think I want to visit there because I want to go to
I
want to go to the Prairie Festival, because you all, not only are you doing this wonderful scientific research for food for the future and sustainable agriculture, really, which is not what we have today. But you also have things like barn dances and this Prairie Festival you have coming up at the, you have all kinds of things going on.
I would warn you, just a cautionary note, if you want to learn about the Land Institute, come any time of the year except when the Prairie Festival is going on. Because we have great speakers, wonderful speakers. This is a two-day event. We had last year 1,200 folks there. So we don't have the time really to take Donna Quinn by the hand and show her around the test plots and the research center and so forth. But if you came a week before or a week after or any other time, we could do that. So, come for great speakers. Come to the Prairie Festival for the barn dance. Come then.
And but, Thomas Friedman, I want to ask about that, but I want to ask you a little bit about that. But first, I want to just do a little station ID. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Talk of Our Towns. I'm your host, Donna Quinn. We're here on KMUN 91.9, and today my guest is Dr. John Schmidt. He is the Development Director for the Land Institute, which is based in Salina, Kansas, and they are working on a revolution in agriculture that will eliminate soil erosion, require less chemical and energy inputs, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, and virtually eliminate oceanic dead zones. And they think, and they know, in fact, because they're getting closer all the time, that this is more than a pipe dream. It's actually happening. And you can go to landinstitute.org to find out more information. I found out about the Land Institute just earlier this year when I read a piece by Thomas Friedman, a columnist from the New York Times, whom I respect very much. And he came to visit you, and he wrote about monocultures. He compared that with Egypt, didn't he?
Right.
And how was it having Thomas Friedman there? Because he certainly brought a spotlight of attention to the work that you're doing, which he thinks is so important.
Well, I think it was great having him there. I wasn't there when he was there. I was out of town doing my type of work. But we use a phrase occasionally at the Land Institute that we're internationally famous and locally obscure. And there's really a lot of truth to that. You know, if you ask the average person in Salina or Kansas generally, or Astoria, probably, they might not know of the Land Institute, or if they did, they might have a misconception, like I heard earlier today, that we're a land trust and we do conservation easements, which is not what we do at all. But there's lots of misconceptions about what we do.
So your job really is, you want to educate people and let them know that this very important Research and Development Institute exists in the United States, and that they can be part of this and they can find out more information about this. And I would think that, you know, my grandfather was a farmer, and I would think that farmers would see also that some of the things that they're doing just isn't working, even though we are wedded many times to tradition. We say, well, this is how we've always done it.
Absolutely.
That doesn't mean that's how nature does it or that how it should be done.
Right.
Do you have farmers who come and talk to you and say?
We do, and we're happy to talk to them. We're not really promoting our seeds and what we've developed with them, because it's not ready to release. You know, that'd be the worst thing we could do is give some farmer something that we think is, you know, about ready but not quite ready, and then they don't get the crop they're expecting, and so word gets around that, you know, this is really some bad stuff, and so we don't want that to happen. So we won't what was the ad that they used to say, you know, we won't release it before it's time, or
right.
something
yes,
like
yes,
that.
Right, yes, yes, right. We serve no wine or something before it's time, something
right,
like that. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. So what are the most exciting things that the Land Institute is doing that you would like people to know about, and what are the challenges that you see that you all are facing now?
Well, maybe to answer that, let me just back up a little bit. You know, I think compared to when I was a kid, and I'm almost 70, everybody had a tie-in with a farm. You know, maybe their granddad's farm, maybe their uncle or some. They had a farm that they could go visit. That's not true anymore. I think for the vast majority of people under the age of 25, they don't really have that connection to the farm anymore, and so they don't know where a loaf of bread comes from. That it comes from a wheat field. I mean, you could talk about the hamburgers and other things, but I think we've lost a lot of connection between humans and the landscape. So I guess the way I'd answer that question is, first of all, I think it's important for your listeners to know where their food comes from. I mean, that's critically important. And then on top of that, I would say a lot of it comes from, if they followed it back to the source and knew all of the repercussions, they might not be totally happy with it, because a lot of it's not sustainably grown. If we keep doing the things the way we've been doing them for 50 years, you know, another 50 years, we may be out of soil, or the toxicity may be such that it's just not going to work.
You mentioned that the Land Institute is internationally famous because you really are ground zero for doing this kind of work.
Right.
But people know in other parts of the world what you're doing.
They do, and Wes Jackson particularly has been awarded international awards. He was named by the Smithsonian, one of 35 who make a difference. Life magazine recognized him several years ago as one of something like one of 100 people that'll be important in the 21st century. Even Rolling Stone had a list of, I think, 100 people that were changing the world, and Wes made that list. And so in a lot of ways, we are, in fact, internationally famous, but in a lot of ways, locally obscure.
You mentioned that. That's quite a saying. What is the most exciting part of the work for you, and what are the challenges?
Well, I think the most exciting part for me, selfishly, from my background's wildlife, and I could see just the incredible benefits that a perennial polyculture would provide to all kinds of wildlife species. But what would probably interest most people most of the time would be our waters would be much cleaner. We'd get away for the most part of dead zones in the oceans. Soil erosion would pretty much come to a halt. We wouldn't have to use nearly the herbicides, insecticides, fungicides that we do now. We would be using water at a sustainable level, not a unsustainable level, just to name a few.
Well, those are very important. We can't live without food and water. Those are the essential things for human beings, for sure. What challenges do you see right now?
Well, I think from my perspective, funding is always a challenge. We've managed to grow each year, and our budget's getting bigger, and I think we're staying ahead of inflation because our programs are growing, and it seems like when you get donors that have participated, they know other people, and they spread the word a lot about the Land Institute, and which is very helpful. I think just the challenges that you alluded to earlier, that people have been doing things a certain way for 50 years, and, you know, why should they do anything different? Because it's been working, they've been making a profit, you know, we're doing a pretty decent job of feeding 7 billion people, but it's not on a sustainable basis. It just can't go on the way we're going. So I think education's a big challenge for the future.
Yes, but nothing. This is a legacy project. I mean, what you're doing is it's the seven generations out. I mean, it's taking care of the future. It's thinking about that, seeing that we can't afford to keep losing this topsoil, and doing that very important work. And so you're looking at perennial grains, a mixed prairie situation, which is what is, I don't know, what grows right around Salina, Kansas?
Well, a lot of things grow there, but the ones we're working on, as I mentioned, are sorghum and sunflowers, wheat, of course, some kind of legume that would be as part of this mixture that would provide the nitrogen to the other plants, so you wouldn't have to apply any fertilizer.
We just have a few moments left. What would you like the listening audience to know or do about the Land Institute?
Well, I'd like them, first of all, to know more about to understand more about agriculture and where their food comes from, and then know about the Land Institute and what we're trying to do. And I think the website is probably the best source of information. And if that's not enough, then give me a call and I'll try to answer any questions.
And you do travel to let people know more about what's happening. And I mean, I just think this is one of the best websites I've seen, because it's so impressive. You have the science, you have the mission, the reasoning. And Wes Jackson must be a pretty happy person that he's got all these excellent people working for him, and he's getting so much good press lately.
I think he's pleased. He's such a dynamic individual himself that people always ask, well, how's Wes doing? Because he's older than I am, and I'm nearly 70, and I say, well, he's like the Energizer Bunny. He just takes a licking and keeps on ticking.
You have a lot of young people involved, though, too, I think.
We do.
And that's really encouraging, because it's farming is actually now, I think, a lot of people are looking at that, young people, and saying...
They are. They really are.
And we have farmers, young people who are farmers right in this Columbia Pacific region. And so that's an excellent thing. And how do you feel? Are you upbeat about the future of the planet? I mean, what is your feeling about it?
Well, there's a lot of problems, certainly. But I do feel, I guess, working for the Land Institute, that there's a good solution to some of the problems out there. It's nice to be a part of that. I mean, I do feel optimistic.
Why should we be pessimistic? That doesn't get us anywhere. I think optimism is what is needed.
That's right.
And the fact that you can see results of some of the things that you all are doing. And you're close. You're maybe 8 or 9 years out from having this wheat species that will be ready, that you could actually give to farmers.
Right. Yeah, I've seen just huge progress in the 9 years I've been around there.
What would you like to see happen on a national level in terms of anything happening in Washington, I suppose, for like there are farm bills and all these kinds of things happening? Is there anything that you get involved with politically at the Land Institute?
We do, to a degree. Wes has been promoting a 50-year farm bill instead of the 5-year farm bill that's been the history for the last, I don't know how many years, to really look ahead and start planning for perennial polycultures and get away from some of the annual monocultures.
I think that's what we need. We need a bumper sticker that says perennial polycultures, and then people say, what are you talking about? And you say, well, you know, this monoculture thing we're doing has not been working. Yes, we've been eating, but no. So I like that idea. I think we should have a little bumper sticker for that. We should talk about the Land Institute. And any other things you want us to know about? I mean, sunflowers, you're growing the big, beautiful sunflowers for the sunflower seeds, which are full of protein and good things for
right.
us.
Right. Well, it's mainly for their oil properties. Before I started working at the Land Institute, I thought, well, sunflowers are grown for bird seed and people to eat when they're driving down the road, and baseball players. but that's a very, very small part of what sunflowers are used for. It's mainly for the oil for cooking.
And are you cooking at the Land Institute? I would think that you're saying, well, let's see how tasty this is going to be.
You know, there's a lot of things we could select for. Right now we're selecting for yield, for such things as the height of plants. We want more of the energy of the plant to go into seeds and not a real high stock. So that's kind of the direction we're going.
Okay.
But we're not really looking at flavor or some other things that we could be looking at.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's a future. You have more work to do, it sounds like.
Oh,
too.
For sure.
So if you want to know more information about the Land Institute, you can go to landinstitute.org. Dr. John Schmidt has been my guest today. Any last thing you'd like to say?
It's been a pleasure, and I hope a lot of your listeners will come and visit.
I hope so, too. So Salina, Kansas needs to be on your to-do list so that you can see the Land Institute, ground zero for the future of agriculture. Well, I want to thank you so much for being here. I want to thank you, Terry Wilson, our engineer extraordinaire, as usual. And I also want to extend my gratitude to local talented banjo instructor Michael Bruin for his original theme music for this program. Until next week, find a moment for yourself today. Take a deep breath. With gratitude for all the good things in your life, focus on those good things. That will expand them. They're always good things in spite of all of the chaos of the world. Focus on those good things and focus on feeling good. And then giving yourself a loving and compassionate hug is a really good thing to do. Or you can give yourself a pat on the back for being uniquely you. You're the only one in the world. For doing the best you can and for being here now in this moment, the only moment which exists on the amazing planet we call Earth.